Good morning and welcome to WHTC Money Matters with your hosts, Kerry Cooley and Jack Godfrey from the Cooley Godfrey Investment Group of Zeeland. The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. And now, WHTC Money Matters.
And good morning, West Michigan. Jack Godfrey, Kerry Cooley off for baseball today. You got me. I'm at Spartan Stadium here waiting for the Spartans to play at 2 o'clock against Youngstown State. Had a little bit late time parking this morning, so calling in a little bit late. But, hey, our show today is going to be about marriage and money, how to mix them successfully together. A lot to talk about this morning, lots going on in the market. Syria is abated at the time, and that's caused the market, I think, to have some positive sentiment. Last few days, still volatile, but up for the week, which I think is positive. You know, just some interesting statistics. We always get interesting statistics, and here's one. It's called About the Same. 27% of individual stock investors were bullish 2 days after the Lehman Brothers collapse in 2008. Today, 36% are bullish. I thought it'd be a lot higher. You know, really interesting. Other interesting facts today. I always like to read these facts. U.S. jobs. Since 2009, we've added 6.15 million jobs. That equals 72% of the 8.5 million jobs lost during the recession of 2007-2008. That's a lot of jobs, still short, basically 2.5 million jobs. So that's a lot of jobs we still make up, need to make up. Here's another interesting one. You know, everybody says you need a college degree to be successful. Only two of the 10 fastest growing occupations in the U.S., two of the 10 still require a bachelor degree. Only two of the 10. That's pretty interesting. Here we go. 13 U.S. states have a higher credit rating than the United States of America. You know, we're coming up on our national debt. I think it's going to be the first week of October. They keep on pushing it back. And I think that, we're going to probably extend the debt again. And we're somewhere around $17 trillion right now and growing, which is a big number. And I think they're going to extend that again, which I think they have to extend it. But that's just a really interesting number when we talk about the debt continuing to grow and nobody seems to care much. You know, we don't hear much talk about it. You know, we hear in the back pages of the Wall Street and the back pages of a business section of the New York Times, but not much activity, not much talk. It's, you know, the president's talking about Syria. Our legislators went back to work this past week and not much talk about it. So that's by the numbers. Those are interesting numbers. If you take a look at where we're at year to date, you know, those are also very interesting numbers. We look at the past month, and we're talking equities now, not stocks. If you take a look at the last month, things are positive in every category except value. Growth, or large cap value, mid cap value, small cap value are all negative, about 0.5%. Every other category for the month is up. Small cap growth is up 2%. Over a three-month period, the best place to be is small cap growth. That's 10%. You know, why do you think small cap growth is up? Just because they're a little bit more nimble, don't have to go through committees and processes and approvals and multiple VPs approving it and multiple committees approving it. Small cap companies, you know, the department head just says do it and they go. Which is nice flexibility in a small company. You know, the problem with a small company is they sometimes do not have the cash flow nor the borrowing power to do the things they want to do. But if you look at year-to-date small cap growth, and you look at this number, small cap growth, 30% year-to-date, January through, in this report is through 9/11, up 30% in that category. Now, you also have to realize this is the most volatile category. Over time, it's usually in second place past mid-cap growth, but it is a very successful category. If you look at 3 years, it is still the most successful. A small cap growth over a three-year period per year, 22%. And those, again, are pretty spectacular numbers. That's what I think. Best place to be in the sectors year-to-date is surprising. It's still healthcare, which is up 30%. And a lot of companies are figuring that, and I'm talking to the healthcare professionals now, that because you're going to see 30 more million people, 30 to 40 more million people on the rolls here through a lot of different categories, Medicaid especially. They're going to be going to a Walgreens, CVS, et cetera. Again, I'm not promoting those companies, just talking about the news. But those companies are going to be busier, turning more profits. We also think on the other side of the ledger, device companies, hips, knees, et cetera, elbows, are going to be, have a rougher time because they're not going to get as many people approved for those needs that they have for, again, knees, hips, et cetera. We also see maybe a growth in some of the healthcare areas, some of those areas being drugs. We're going to definitely have more prescription for drugs. So, stay tuned for that category. Again, that category is up 30% for the year. It's not the best category over a, it is still, well, it's the second best category of a three-year period. Consumer discretionary is the number one category for the past 3 years, but healthcare is a close second. So you might want to think of putting some of your portfolio in, as we just talked about, healthcare. There's a couple of healthcare sectors. They actually have you can just buy healthcare, which spreads your risk out over a lot of different categories, over devices and hospitals and et cetera. Again, those hospitals that are publicly owned, drug companies, et cetera. So if you need help finding some of those, you can always call our office so we can help you there. If we talk about bonds, we always like bonds, but, people who truly don't understand bonds, that we're truly not going through a problem. When I say problem, bonds are down, but, we, Carrie and I both still like high yield. We're still putting people into high yield. That sector is down. People don't understand why, but, all bonds are down through collateral damage, through assessment of those. So you have to make sure you understand what's happening. It is a market issue, not a sector issue. So it's nothing wrong with the bonds, still paying what they did before. Now, there's some issue that came up this week with the fact that munis might have some problems with Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico, of course, is a territory of the United States, tax-free, federal tax-free, local tax-free. Puerto Rico's not going through, they're not having a very good time fiscally right now, and they might default on some of their muni bonds. That's talk. Right now, amongst the muni investors, or not the muni investors, but the muni people who are investing the money, the money managers. So you might want to take a look at, if you're overweighted in some munis that have Puerto Rico, you might want to take a look at your prospectus, look that up, and again, we can help you find that. So those are some interesting things. We always like to go over questions. We have people that write in questions, call with questions, a lot of different questions, and still, the number one question this past week has been, they still, most people do not understand who take RMDs. When you're over 70 and a half, you're required to take a minimum distribution from your traditional IRAs, 401ks, et cetera. That is a number that increases every year. But still this year, 2013, you're able to donate all sum of your RMD to a nonprofit, a legitimate nonprofit, and you will not be charged tax on that. So that was the number one question we had this week. We go over it every week. I have a number of people that don't understand the rule, and that is a nice thing that you can do is donate to your church, hospice, et cetera. And you have to go through a process. You're not touching the money. Whoever handles your money can send it directly to the brokerage account with your nonprofit. They will sell it. Again, you're not taxed on your RMD, which is the nice thing. You just got to understand how to do it, and any brokerage firm, including us, would be glad to help you do that.
Hey, Jack?
Yes.
What do you say we take our first break?
All right, let's take our first break. You're listening to WHBC Money Matters. This is Jack Godfrey, Kerry Cooley off today, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, Holland Zealand, Jack Godfrey, WHTC Money Matters, Kerry Cooley off today. We're talking marriage and money, how those two mix. We'll get to that here in a few minutes. People write us in questions every week. We're talking about RMDs, that people can give their RMD required minimum distribution. And once you turn 70 and a half, that's a requirement. Question we have is, what does if you have $1 million in RMD and you're taking the very first one this year, the divisor is 27.4. And just to give you some idea, you'd need to take a minimum of $36,496.35 out of your IRA. Now, that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money having $1 million. Most people don't, but some people do. That's a lot of money. That drives you probably to the next tax bracket. You're in 15. That's going to drive you probably to the 25. Could cause you to have more problems with Social Security taxation. Maybe not. Maybe you're already taxing your Social Security. When you take your RMD, feel free to take that in kind. Many people want you to take the cash, and they'll figure out another place to invest it. If you like the investment in your RMD or in your IRA, why would you want to take the cash if you don't need it? And sometimes the strategy is to, take it over 12 months, take it over, get it one the same time every year. You have the flexibility, again, to make sure that you take this RMD in kind. That means you can take shares of your stock, shares of mutual fund. It's important for you to understand that you don't need to take cash. Other strategies, again, that we talked about is you can give it to a church, nonprofit, et cetera. Things that you can do is you only need to take the amount of money. You can aggregate all your IRAs because lots of people have, maybe one in annuity, one in this IRA, one in that IRA. And sometimes the strategy is only to take it from one. So you take a look at your December 31st balance, 2012. That's what you need to take out this year. Add all those up, divided by 27.4 this year. If you're 70 and a half, that's what you need to do. Left with RMDs. Okay, I started my own business. What are my retirement options? Had two people come in the last week and say, okay, I have a small business. I want to start a retirement plan for my three employees and myself. And I, proceed to ask them lots of questions. I go, what is your objective by offering this to your employees? Well, they came from another spot. They have these benefits. I think it's about time that I put money away for myself. What are my options? And then the second question I say is, besides saying you want to open one up, what is your objective in terms of how much money would you like to match for your employees? Do you want to have a match, not have a match? There's lots of things that if you want to max it out and you're a very small, one or two employees, maybe a SEP, because you're able to give up to 25%, which is a large contribution for some people. If that's your objective, you have to give 25% to your employees. So if you it all depends on how much you as the owner want to put away. You can do a simple as you can put away $12,000. If you're slightly over 50 like myself and Kara, you can put extra $2,500 in, which is then $14,500. Match your employees 3% if you like to do that. If they contribute, you have to put in 3%. They put in 3, you put in 3, so you have to match them. The rules are 3%. That's the maximum you have to put away. If they put in 1%, well, then you'll match 1%, but it is the maximum is 3%. Or you can just put a non-discretionary 2% away for all the employees, whether they participate or not. Or, you know, you can do a 401k, Safe Harbor I do, and then there's no testing. Safe Harbor says you need to match employees, and you need to do that 3 to 4%. So it really depends on how much you want to put away. Those are some real easy ones, SEP, simple, 401k. Depends on your strategy, and we can help always help you with your business. Lots of options today to do it for your business. Other things is what's the limitation for contributing to a Roth? The contribution is $5,500 for those people under 50, $6,500 for those over 50. That's the maximum income limit for single people. That means if you make over $112,000, you're single, reporting your taxes as a single person, you cannot do a Roth IRA if you make over $112,000. For a joint couple, it's $178,000 joint. Those are big numbers, but there's a lot of people that cannot do it. So we always say, you know, put the money into a IRA, you know, make sure that you put it into one where you don't get a deduction, and then the very second after you put it in, convert it to a Roth. So there's some backdoor ways you can always put money into a Roth. Now, if you have other IRAs, you want to convert it, they take some contributions or they take some factoring of your other IRAs, and let's just say, you know, you have $100,000 in an IRA and you have a $5,000 in a non-contributory IRA. So, you know, they're going to take 5% from here, 95% there for everyone you put away. So there's some strategies there. So, again, you're always willing to, if you want to, call us with questions, write in. If you want to write us, you can go to our email at CooleyGodfrey@LPL.com. If you want to go to our website, it's www.CooleyGodfrey.com. Or you can actually, email Chris right now at studio@WHTC.com and leave a question at the studio or call our office at 616-931-1223, extension 4. I'll get you, Janet. That's 616-931-1223, extension 4. So those are some things. Let's get to our topic right now. And I want to let you know that our show today is being brought to you by Mary Jo Borman. Mary Jo Borman is an estate planning attorney located in our building at 123 East Main. She does all types of estate planning. And you can call her at 616-772-2487 or visit her website at bormanlaw.com. It's www.bormanlaw.com. So thanks to Mary Jo for sponsoring our show today. Our show today is marriage and money and how do those two mix. And I guess it's that's always a difficult thing in any marriage. You know, you have some money when you're married. You know, most people don't have that much money, and the basic thing is to have your goals in sync. And you know, if you're both savers when you go into a marriage, that's always a good thing to have. But if you're both spenders when you go into a marriage, that's not such a good thing. Or if one spouse is a spender, one is a saver, that's a little rough because you always have a lot of conflict. So, you know, I always encourage people before they get married, you know, work out a budget, where the money's going to go. So you always know before you get married what it looks like, what debts you have. And, of course, we're talking marriage and money, but you always want to start before you get married. So if you haven't talked about it before, we're talking about, you know, start talking now because you need to come to the table and say, what debts do I currently have? You know, what is my debt load? You know, that's important that you understand that. Both of you need to understand what the debt load is, what the payments are, who's going to make the payments, what the interest rate is, and you'd be surprised how many people have still not refinanced their mortgage. Some people have mortgages at 5.5%, 6%, 6.5%. So if you're in a marriage right now, go through all that. I've had four people successfully refinance their mortgages in the last month, and they didn't realize that the rates were so low, and they didn't realize that they needed to refinance because they're within 15 years of their mortgage, or some are 12 years, but it really worked out nice to some people saved one or two, some people saved 5 years, but the amount of interest, I think now it's 3.1, 3.2 for a 15-year. Those are still pretty good rates. So, again, marriage and money, you need to sit down and list everything you have, and you have to list where the income's coming from. And then, you know, people ask, well, what should we put away for retirement? Well, if you ask me that question, I'm going to tell you, 16%. 16% for the wife, 16% for the husband. That's a lot of money. You make $100,000, guess what that is? That's $32,000 you're putting in jointly if you make $100,000 together. That is a savings rate that we recommend. That is a savings rate that's nationally advised. If you have the money, that's what you need to put away for you as a couple. That would make sure that you have more than enough money once you get to retirement. So, you know, and then the next thing in mixing money and marriage is the priorities. What is the priorities? You know, it's each one has a different priority. List them 1 through 10, 1 through 5, 1 through 15. And then, you know, each of you kind of say which one you want to make as number one. One should always be, maybe it should be debt reduction. A lot of people right now, when they first get married, it's college loan reduction. And, you know, what I encourage young people to do, and if you have a young couple out there that's just married, they have college debt, is live poor. You know, live poor for another 2, 3, 4 years. That's what you're going to have to do. Some people are coming out of college with 80 to 100. You know, professional people are coming out with $200,000 in debt. You know, you come out, you're a professional. Maybe one person just has to use all, 100% of their paycheck for debt, college debt. Debt percentage right now, not debt percentage, but the if you got loans out there for colleges, some of those percentages are 6.8. If you went 20 years ago, 6.8 was pretty cheap. It's pretty expensive today when you can get mortgages for 3.2 to 4%. So you know, you want to make sure that each of you has your priorities and your goals in sync, because if one does, one doesn't, causes problems. And I think you need to at least meet every quarter. You at least need to meet maybe every month, like my wife and I do meet every month. And we pick a topic to go through, our budgets, our priorities, where the money comes in, where the money's being spent, what are we doing philanthropically. And, you know, it's always a priority to say, you know, what are we doing philanthropically? Where are we donating our money? How do we donate our money? And I've talked to three people in the last 2 weeks who I believe are going to dedicate so much of their into their trust when they die to foundations. And I want to throw that out to people who are listening to the show, that it's very important if you want to donate money philanthropically, that I think you ought to put a percentage, not a dollar amount, to some philanthropic categories, because, you know, you might have a lot of money to now, you've done your trust, you get near the end of life, you haven't looked at it in 20, 30 years, you know, all of a sudden you have a dollar amount that's 60% of your entire estate, and that's in your trust. The trustees need to execute it, and the kids might get down to the end and get 20, 30%. That was not your intention, but you've used a dollar amount instead of a percentage. So when you set up those trusts, I'm not trying to give you legal work, I'm just trying to help you in that marriage and money, to try to figure out what works well in donating near the end of your life in your marriage, at the beginning of your life, and you know, how you donate and what your goals are in making donations, which should be a priority to help others all the time.
Hey, Jack?
Yes?
Let's take our last break.
All right, sounds good, Chris. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. We'll be right back talking marriage and money in about 1 minute. Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is Jack Godfrey. Kerry Cooley off today. We're talking about marriage and money, how to mix them. And, you know, if, you know, let's just talk about how to mix marriages. I mean, if you're in your second or third or fourth marriage, and you have some assets, you have a house, you have a bank account, you have a couple IRAs, it's always important, in my belief, to do a prenup. Worked on a lot of prenups with Mary Jo Borman. She is an attorney in our office. And it's really worked out well, and that's how marriage and money work out well together, again, in second, third marriages, where, you know, you're coming together. And even in a first marriage, you know, sometimes you have a couple where one comes in with a lot of money, one comes in with a lot of debt. There might be some uneasiness, and I always recommend that people sit down with their attorney and talk about, should we do a prenup? And I always say, probably should. I mean, it's we've helped a lot of people do prenups. They're still married, but it does do a lot of relief. You know, who gets the house? You know, I own the house. I'm marrying you. You're coming to live with me. It's a new marriage situation. Do my kids get the house when who dies first? If I die first, I own the house. Do my kids get it, or do my spouse get it, who already has different kids? Is it a lifelong lease? Who gets the IRAs? Today, if your spouse and the kids are the beneficiary and not the spouse needs to sign off. Very important that you talk about this. What happens at death? Because if you don't do it, sometimes the spouse who dies first, their estate goes away to the other spouse. That could happen very easily. Now, who pays for the debts? Who lives in the house? Who gets the money? How do they get the money? Who gets a lifelong lease on the house? All those things, when you talk money and marriage together, whether you're getting married for the first time, second time, third time, whatever, it's very smart of you as a going into a marriage to talk about things like this. Whose trust? How does it come together? Sometimes you have married couples, they both have their own trust, and they have trust still in the names of their previous spouse. That's just how it works. But you need to talk about this because some rules trump trust. If you have a beneficiary on your IRA, you have a 401k at work where the beneficiary is different than you anticipated, those trump your trust. So you want to make sure that you understand what a trust does. You have to understand what beneficiaries do. Life insurance beneficiaries, they trump trust. So it's important that when in marriage and money do mix, they mix very well. But you need to understand the rules that happens when one spouse is disabled, death, early death, late death. And when I say early death or late death, when you have early death, where does the money go? If you have a late death, meaning you live to 101, and again, you have in your trust that X number of dollars goes to a philanthropic organization. Sometimes, your kids get left out because of the percentages, so or of the dollar amount. So it's sometimes you need to, you know, look at things, step back, review that trust. You need to review it on a regular basis. Anytime you have a situation in another birth of a grandchild, a birth of another child, a divorce, situations where you need to review your trust. So part of those are, you know, things of marriage and money that sometimes are sticky, and that's why you need to go to a third party, being the attorney, financial advisor like Carrie and myself, who would help you understand the rules. It's always your decision, but if you understand the rules that affect your decision or the decision, what's going to happen when you make these decisions, how does the rules apply? Those are very important things that you always got to understand. So, you know, please spend time doing that. You know, financial advisors can help you do that, and especially if you have kids. And, you know, I met with a recent master's graduate, a occupational therapist, and, you know, we just, you know, trying to get her get started with a budget, et cetera, not getting married just yet, but thinking about it. And, you know, we tried to make sure that this little girl who's 24 years old needs to have things like power of attorney, needs to have a will, needs to have a health care directive. Age doesn't matter when you're going to die, but once you start accumulating assets and once you start accumulating things, a house, et cetera, who takes care of those upon disability and death in your marriage, upon getting married? Very simple documents that, again, Mary Jo in her office could help you take care of. Very important to think about these things, very important to execute these documents, review things, and again, we're always willing to have conferences in our office to help you negotiate those, understand those, and it's just important. So next week, let's talk about next week's show a little bit. You know, Obamacare is going to be upon us here October 1st. We have Stacy Kamphuis, who's going to be calling in from the insurance group, talking about health care next week. I think it's very important that you tune in next week. We have a workshop coming up on the 26th of this month, and the title of that workshop is Can You Afford to Retire? And very important that you know your number. Know your number 40 years from now, what it looks like. And I always encourage people to attend these workshops to help we're going to give you tools to help you figure this out. We'll help you get through this. Again, we're going to give you tools. We're not going to be talking about any investments. It's only strategy of can you retire. And that is a crucial issue for you. Many people are afraid, but sometimes you're forced into retirement before you hit your number. So you always need to understand what your number is. So that workshop's going to be the 26th. Call our office at 616-931-1223, extension 4. Janet will sign you up, and that's going to be at the Hayworth Center there on Hope's campus, and that's going to be 6 to 8. And then there's going to be a light dinner provided. So those are some things that you want to look forward to in the next couple weeks. So we come to the end of our show. We've had a great show today. Thanks for listening, and you're listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is Jack Godfrey, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to WHTC Money Matters with your hosts, Jack Godfrey and Kerry Cooley from the Cooley Godfrey Investment Group of Zealand. The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Be sure to join us next Saturday at the same time for WHTC Money Matters on 1450 WHTC, Holland's hometown station.